This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. As we heard a moment ago from Scott Horsley, there were questions about Libya today at President Obama's White House news conference. The president cited the speed with which Libyan assets were frozen and sanctions were imposed, and he said that all options are on the table. And that's the first issue we're putting on the table for our regular political commentators, columnists David Brooks of The New York Times. Good to see you, David.
Good to see you.
And E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution. Hiya.
Good to be here.
We've heard calls from some Democrats for the U.S. to impose a no-fly zone over Libya. Defense Secretary Gates, on the other hand, has been very, very cautious about that. David first. Is there a deep division within the administration about what to do here?
I don't think so. I mean, there were some different analyses of what's likely to happen, but I don't see a deep division. What you see is an administration that is extremely cautious and has been cautious. It's not only a question of no-fly zones. We could be arming the rebels. There are a variety of things we could be doing to help unlodge Gaddafi, and I think the administration has erred continually on the side of caution. Nonetheless, I was cheered by the press conference today. I thought the president's rhetoric, it emphasized the dynamic situation of the policy, that maybe you thought we were too slow off the mark before, but we're moving, and we're continually moving in a relentless way to say, and the metaphor he used, tightening the noose, I think is a important metaphor, because it really just demonstrates some resolve and commitment. So I thought he showed that his administration is moving steadily to become tougher and tougher.
EJ, what do you think about the president's handling of Libya?
Today is brought to you by the word cautious. You know, when the American people decide a president has been unsuccessful, they typically turn to that president's opposite in character and orientation. George W. Bush was not cautious. Barack Obama is. He's been cautious about committing American power. He has also been cautious about committing his own power in this budget fight.
Mm-hmm.
I was struck by the way he formulated that. We are slowly tightening the noose on Gaddafi, he said. I think up to now the emphasis has been on the word slowly. And there have been some bumps along the way. Mr. Clapper of the CIA saying Gaddafi looks like he's going to survive. Well, Clapper, as the president pointed out, was expressing what intelligence says to us right now, which is what he's supposed to do. But they've ended up sending mixed signals. Nonetheless, they seem to be moving toward a tougher position. On the budget, if I could just say quickly, he finally drew some lines today, which he's been reluctant to do, I think helpfully saying you shouldn't cut Head Start or Pell Grants and suggesting some other problems with the Republican budget. But he still didn't jump into the fight yet. He said, well, we got to find some agreement in the middle. So, again, even on some of his own priorities, there's caution.
But before leaving the Middle East altogether here, are we seeing in the administration's response to first Tunisia and Egypt, now Libya, some greater clarification of to what degree Barack Obama is the realist and to what degree there are ideals about people in developing countries and now reaching out to them and supporting their aspirations for democracy?
Yeah, I remember having an interview with him during the campaign, and the first half of the interview he sounded like a complete idealist about democracy in the Middle East, and the second half he sounded like George H.W. Bush, a complete realist. And if you had taken those two interviews and put them together, you thought, is this one guy? And I still think he's that. But I guess I do think the realist dominates in these situations because he gets bogged down or else cautioned soberly, however you want to put it, in the details, wanting to make sure the Gulf states are with us, wanting to make sure the Europeans are with us, wanting to make sure the UN is with us, always wanting to have every little duck in a row before you do anything. And I do think that's his temperament on these things.
EJ?
It's worth remembering that Brent Scowcroft, the first President Bush's foreign policy advisor, a quintessential realist, very much admired Barack Obama. I think there is more realist there than idealist, and yet he knows we have to stand for something in the world, and he eventually gets around to that.
Okay, from the Middle East to the Middle West. Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin signed the bill that limits collective bargaining rights for many state workers after what looked like the least collegial piece of legislation.
Makes the peaceable kingdom.
What do you guys think? Is this the end of a fight or perhaps even a high water mark for something? Or is it the beginning of still a greater rollback of, say, public employee union rights?
Well, one thing is politically, how will it shake out? And obviously polls are against the governor, though I guess I just look at history and I look at when President Reagan went after the air traffic controllers, when Margaret Thatcher went after a series of unions, I didn't see much of a rollback, a political cost to that. It seemed to pay off. And the crucial thing is, how does he take advantage of the power that's really been given to the governor? And the one thing I think it has been underreported is the need for flexibility. And I'm concerned in states like Wisconsin and New York, many other states, there are going to be teacher layoffs. And one of the things that has to happen is you can't just get rid of the last in, first out, some of these young teachers who are most enthusiastic. And if Governor Walker can take some of his new power and really use it flexibly to make better government, then it'll probably pay off for him. If he just cuts in a dumb way, then it probably won't.
There would still be fewer teachers, but you're saying
I'm saying
you'd be retiring older teachers.
We're probably going to have to cut. The question is, do we cut in a flexible, efficient way or not?
EJ, what do you think?
Well, what's really striking is he's cutting an awful lot of state education aid to cities. I think that Governor Walker and the Republicans are going to regret this fight. Yes, they definitely won this round by ramming this thing through the Senate in a questionable way. But what they have done is they have mobilized Democrats and the labor movement, Democrats in a way President Obama wasn't able to in 2010, and the labor movement as it's never been mobilized before. How long has it been since the words collective bargaining went into any microphone in this studio? And I think that the biggest problem is that when you looked at the polls, the people who fled Walker in his own party were working class Republicans. This kind of reminded people we used to call Reagan Democrats of what had made them Democrats. These are basically pro-union people. The white working class gave Republicans a 30-point lead in the last congressional elections. If they start losing them, they're in trouble. The recall efforts are going to be the test.
I just can't think of a historical example where somebody was tough on unions and paid a price for it. Maybe there are examples, but I was thinking around trying to think of one. I couldn't think of one.
Well, this may be the first, and I think so far that's proving true, because I don't think Reagan lost ground the way Walker did.
Isn't that how Calvin Coolidge became president, by cracking down on
that's true.
On the unions that's been
going on and Boston cops.
Here, well, you know, one other point. In Wisconsin, there was a poll in which people were asked, do you think to address the budget deficit, you should increase taxes for people who make over $150,000? 72% of the people said yes. And, completely off the table.
the problem I had with Walker, cutting the budget is going to take decades, both parties. You got to make everybody pay. People in both parties have to pay. And that was sort of the tragedy here. It set a predicate for partisan cutting for decades to come.
Republicans want to take tax cuts for the wealthy off the table. They are very popular. Democrats in Washington ought to learn something from Democrats in Wisconsin and stand for something.
EJ Dionne, David Brooks, thanks so much for talking with us once again.
Thank you.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.